The Seattle area housing market is still limping along. What does that mean for folks thinking about investing in real estate? This is Weekday. From 94.9 KUOW, I'm Marcy Silman, in today for Steve Scher. Some parts of the country have finally started to see a small upswing in their real estate markets. When will the wave arrive in King County? In the meantime, is a sluggish housing market time for real estate investors to think about venturing out? This hour, we're going to take the pulse of our area's market, and we're going to talk about investment. In the studio with us, Tim Ellis. He's a data analyst at Redfin, and he runs the website seattlebubble.com, where he gets to speculate, I think, on all things real estate, local real estate.
That's right.
Thanks for coming in. Also in the studio, Lynn Robertson. She's a real estate investor with more than 20 years experience working as a broker, a property manager, and an investor. And right now she is part of your Seattle home team on Queen Anne Hill. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And on the phone with us from Washington State University in Pullman, Glenn Krellen. And Glenn is with WSU's Washington Center for Real Estate Research. Hello, Glenn.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure to be with you, too. Is it snowing over there?
Not at the moment.
Okay, good. Well, I think, Glenn, let's start with the wide, and then we'll narrow in. What is your perspective on the status of the real estate market in the greater Puget Sound region?
Well, I think we still have to consider it a very depressed market. Sales activity is sluggish. We've basically just completed our third consecutive year where sales rates statewide basically were unchanged. And they're down about 40 to 50% from the peak of the market in 2005. On the price side, prices are continuing to decline a bit. But the price declines in the state of Washington have been much less severe than in some of the poster children that were the worst of the speculation nationwide, where prices are down 50, 60% in some cases.
Was that because we didn't sort of inflate with a huge bubble?
Right. We had a big enough bubble, make no mistake about it. But it wasn't as out of control as the situation that prevailed in places like Las Vegas, Phoenix, Miami.
So, Tim Ellis, do you concur with Glenn's assessment, first of all, and second of all, are we nearing the trough?
Yeah, Glenn's right. We definitely didn't have as big of a bubble here in Seattle as there were in places like Phoenix or Las Vegas. And we were definitely benefiting from that here kind of on the downside by not seeing as large a declines. And we're not going to see as large a declines for sure. As far as, you know, are we nearing the trough? I definitely think some of the closer in parts of Seattle may be nearing the bottom, if not already at the bottom. The further out you go, I think there's going to be a little bit more price left to give up. And I think that that's going to be largely driven by the continued volume we're seeing in foreclosures in some of these further out neighborhoods.
So further out, define specifically, are you talking about Pierce County and Snohomish County? Or
Definitely Pierce and Snohomish, but even South King County and North King County, just kind of, it seems like once you kind of venture outside of the band of, you know, downtown Seattle and the, you know, Ballard and Wedgwood and those kind of neighborhoods, all the way over to the east side in Bellevue and Kirkland, if you go much far to the north or the south outside of those, you see a lot more foreclosures. And I think home prices are still kind of falling a little more in those areas outside of that band.
So, Glenn Krellen, when you talked about sales dropping off, but maybe prices not declining as much in other parts of the country, is the drop off in sales nearing the trough?
I think probably. We've seen real stability, at least statewide, for the last 3 years. And I am somewhat encouraged by the statistics released just yesterday by Northwest MLS that indicated that January activity, particularly in the central Puget Sound, the King, Pierce, Snohomish market, was actually a little bit above January of 2010. Remember that in 2010 we had the tax credit in play, which we don't have now. So the fact that those markets were beginning to see a bit more sales activity is an encouraging sign.
We're talking about the real estate market in the Puget Sound area, King County in particular. Glenn Krellen joins us from his office at Washington State University. In the studios with us, Tim Ellis, who's a data analyst, and Lynn Robertson, who's the person with her feet on the ground here. You work with buyers, I'm assuming. And so Glenn just said he's seeing good numbers for January. What's your experience anecdotally with customers?
I have seen a lot of new buyers and also investors coming out the last month. I was just sitting here in my head calculating, out of the 7 offers that I wrote in January, 3 were multiple offer situations.
Really?
Yes. And it is the lower end, under, say, $250,000 properties, some single family, some condo. But that is an indication to me of what Tim was saying, is that, and Glenn too, that we may have or hit or be near the bottom of where prices are going to go, because it's supply and demand. If people are driving up prices with multiple offers, the new properties on the market are going to come on with that pricing in mind.
So are you seeing a lot more properties available on the market?
Interestingly, not so much. And I think that's part of the supply and demand at hand now. We may, that actually may turn. More people may start putting the properties on the market, and that's certainly going to influence you know, whether or not they're multiple offer situations. But
listeners, if you're somebody who maybe thought about selling a house or thought about buying a house, but first selling a house, have you removed your property from the market and just kind of decided to wait out to see what was going to happen? We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 206-543-KUOW, 206-543-5869. So, Tim, just listening to Lynn talk about the increase in customers, you're a data analyst, you're not a psychologist, but you know, what might prompt buyers to venture back out of their doors and look for something to buy?
You know, the way I see it, it's actually a relatively simple kind of psychological equation. We've seen prices fall quite a bit. Prices are, you know, on average, 25, maybe 30% lower than they were in 2007. And I think that a lot of people are just looking at the prices that they see today and saying, wow, now that, like, I can afford this now. You know, that people who are backing off in 2007 saying, wow, that's, there's no way I'm getting into this housing market, homes are too expensive, are now seeing homes there and they're saying, hey, I could live there and I could afford that. And so I think that's definitely driving a little bit more sales volume, as people say, you know, maybe there's a little more prices left to fall, but I can afford this and I want to live here.
So that's the buyer's perspective. If you're the seller, wouldn't you be kind of saying, well, I would like to get a little more for this house. I'm going to wait a little bit longer. I mean, I would do that personally. So, Lynn, that would drive more buyers, less product.
Correct. And in fact, I have people who do want to sell homes, and I'm encouraging them to wait a little bit unless there's a situation of moving or, you know, some impending need to sell that home.
So, Glenn Crellin, one thing that I've heard is that I don't want to say that our houses are overpriced here in the Puget Sound region, but that, you know, that the kind of house that you can buy in central Seattle for $300,000, I'll just throw out a median price there, you could buy, you know, sort of a mansion in other parts of the country. We have to pay a whole lot more here than in other places.
Than some other places. Certainly, we've always had these regional disparities in housing prices, and that continues to this day, and it's probably always going to remain those sorts of disparities. What we think is an overpriced home in Seattle would still be considered to be a bargain in San Francisco. So we really have to put it in some sort of perspective. The one comment that I want to make, or I've got actually a couple.
Okay.
And one was related to a comment that Tim made a couple of minutes ago, and that's about the role of foreclosures. I continue to look at the inventory of pre-foreclosure and foreclosure properties coming down the pike and say this is the real risk to true price stabilization. We've got a lot of properties that are going to be coming through that process throughout 2011, and that does bode some risk for continued price declines. On the other side of the equation, Tim was talking about the fact that some of these buyers can afford to purchase right now. And the one point that I've been making is that we're at a tipping point on interest rates where it is highly likely that those rates are going to start to increase throughout 2011. And a 1% increase in the mortgage rate would require almost a 10% reduction in prices from current levels for a buyer to keep their payments the same size. And that certainly adds to the psychological motivation for buyers to be entering the market in the short term.
Let me just follow up on the foreclosures, and either you, Glenn, or Tim Ellis can help me understand how a foreclosed property or 100 foreclosed properties actually affect the overall market. You want to try, Glenn, first?
Well, certainly those foreclosed properties, once they've been taken over by the bank doesn't want to hold it in their inventory. It's totally non-productive as an asset on their books. And so they want to dispose of it as quickly as possible. They certainly don't want to take it over as a rental property. And so they're willing to consider offers that are below what most sellers would be willing to accept in the marketplace. And that's what pushes the prices down.
Short sales, I know people who've either put in offers on short sales or actually have finally purchased their home via short sale. It might be cheaper, Tim Ellis, but it's not necessarily less of a headache.
Yeah, definitely. Short sales are still kind of, despite the fact that we've kind of been in this decline now for 3-4 years at least, it seems like short sales are still something that the banks haven't really figured out or just aren't making a priority to really process those in any kind of a reasonable fashion. It's kind of hit or miss. Sometimes, you know, they are able to go through relatively quickly, but it's still, there are some banks who just are taking forever to process or even say no to a short sale for whatever reason.
So Lynn Robertson, do you steer potential buyers away from short sales? How do you feel about it?
Well, they're not my favorite to deal with, I'll be honest. But if the buyer has a long time to wait, then they very well may get a lower price. So it could be in their best interest to do the waiting.
Define long time.
I just had one quoted last week. I got a short sale offer accepted by the seller. It went to the bank, and the bank said, expect to wait up to 5 months.
Mm. Okay.
150 days.
So don't be in a hurry to move. We're talking about investment, either as an investment or an investment in a place to live, with Lynn Robertson, Tim Ellison on the phone with us from Pullman, Washington, Glenn Crullin. If you want to ask a question via email, the address is weekday@kuow.org, or give us a call, 206-543-5869. This is 94.9 KUOW.
It's 19 minutes past 9 o'clock.
KUOW and Federal Way Symphony present Swing Jazz and Blues, a concert featuring the Federal Way Symphony Swing Band with woodwind player Eric Lickle, February 6th at St. Luke's Church in Federal Way. For more information, visit our events page at kuow.org.
This is 94.9 KUOW News and Information.
Support for KUOW comes from the law firm of Christensen O'Connor Johnson Kindness, fostering and protecting the intellectual property rights of corporations, institutions, and the community in the Pacific Northwest for more than 80 years. Online at cojk.com. Your innovation partners.
It's 50 degrees with rain in Seattle. We're expecting a high around 52 today with rain off and on through the afternoon. 46 for the low overnight and a chance of showers. I'm Rainey Cohen. It's 920.
From 94.9 KUOW, I'm Marcy Silman. When the recession hit a few years ago, Seattle was in the middle of a condo construction boom, particularly downtown Seattle. The same was true in Bellevue. Many of those developments have been turned to apartment complex. Most recently, the upscale Bravern condos, at least one of the towers, became an apartment complex. And Bellevue Towers, the region's biggest condo project ever, had to turn to lenders to avoid foreclosure. We're talking about when is a good time time to buy? When is a good time to sell? When is a good time to just put the whole thing on hold? With us by phone, Glenn Crellin of the Washington Center for Real Estate Research at Washington State University. Tim Ellis is a data analyst for Redfin. He runs the site SeattleBubble.com, discussing all things local real estate. Lynn Robertson is a real estate broker, property manager, investor. She's been in this business for more than 20 years. We were talking about, before we took the break, about things that Glenn was thinking about in terms of forecasting out for the market. One was short sales, foreclosed homes entering the market, and the other was availability of mortgage and percent. And Lynn, we were talking about buyers, and you're there on the front lines with folks trying to get loans. I had heard right after the big housing crisis hit that banks all circled the wagons and pulled back in. So what is the status right now?
Well, that is true. They did that initially. So from that point forward, there had to be some movement created. And in fact, FHA has really stepped up. There are great FHA loans out there for 3.5% down. There's also attached with the foreclosures, there's some financing called Home Path. And so that allows people to purchase owner-occupied purchases of 3% down. And they actually have some renovation attachments that you can do if the house needs renovating work. And then there's another program called House Key. And House Key also has a House Key Plus add-on, which is a down payment assistance program. So there's some terrific loans out there with flexible terms and low down payments.
My last question before I go to the callers, because we have a lot of folks with questions, has to do, I was talking about condos, that the condo market fell, I think, before the sort of standalone housing market, didn't it, Tim?
Well, I think the prices peaked around the same time, but condos seem to be getting kind of hit a little harder, for sure, on the downside.
So if somebody came to you or sent in a question to Seattle Bubble about condo investment versus a little sort of nice two-bedroom house investment, what would you tell them?
It really depends on what their, what their priorities are and where they're looking. The cliche is that real estate is local, and that's especially been true on the way down here. A condo in downtown Seattle, it's going to have a very different investment outlook than a condo in, say, Shoreline or someplace that's a little further out.
Investment outlook, meaning it's going to hold its value,
and what you can rent it for, and just things like that. Yeah.
So, Glenn Crellin, if I'm looking for a place to live, do I really care how much the value of my property is going to go up or down?
Well, you do care, but I think that the one thing that we've lost sight of is that these decisions, unless you are strictly an investor, these decisions are primarily about lifestyle, where you want to live, in much the same way as if somebody buys a brand new car off of the dealer's lot, they know that the moment they drive off the lot, they're probably going to be underwater, owing more than that vehicle could be sold for as a resale. But they hold on, make their payments, and enjoy the car. The same thing can happen with a residence, whether it's a condo or a single-family home. And you have to recognize that real estate has always been a cyclical business. Prices do go up and prices go down. And you have to be prepared to ride out some of the more challenging times. One of the problems that has really made this particular cycle worse was the fact that so many homeowners on the way up refinanced the property and took cash out or took other sorts of secondary loans on the property, which really made the decline much worse on their personal balance sheets than it would have been in any historical period.
So in that sense, using your home value as collateral for something else is different than me saying, I want to buy a house that I'm going to live in. Sure, I don't want the value to go down, but I'm not really thinking about using it as some other kind of financial chip.
Exactly.
Okay. So that would be the difference between solely thinking, Lynn, as an investor as opposed to thinking sort of, well, gosh, I'd like it if my house didn't turn into, you know, as worthless as a garbage can lid or something like
right.
that, which I'm hoping doesn't happen in the Seattle area. Tim, you can assure me that's not the case, right?
Yeah, I'm sure homes are going to be worth more than garbage can lids.
We're talking, and we've got a lot of folks who want to also talk about buying, selling, investing in homes. Hi, Kendall in Seattle. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, and hi to your esteemed panel. I just wanted to ask you a question about home affordability. You've talked a little bit about that already, and I really appreciate the discussion focused on buyers. But my question is, for a long time, King County has been measuring this as well. Home affordability has been, you know, sort of stagnant because wages haven't really gone up as much as home prices. And my question is, where is that affordability gap right now?
I'll
take my answer off the air.
Thanks so much, Kendall. Tim, do you want to try that one first?
Yeah, that's a great question. Definitely during the bubble, you know, we saw home affordability plunge to just new lows, it seemed like, every month. And it's definitely recovered a lot with home prices having dropped, you know, in King County 25-30%. And affordability right now, I think, sits a little bit above where it was kind of through the early 2000s, kind of before the bubble really hit. But like Glenn was saying, that's really kind of currently buoyed by the really low interest rates. You know, if we see rates start to go up, then that's just going to mean affordability is going to go down a little more, which, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that affects kind of the sales psychology if that starts to happen.
Now, Glenn, on Tim's site, you have you wrote something that about the relationship between the job market and the real estate market. Do you want to elaborate on that a little?
Well, obviously, nobody can consider purchasing a home when they're unemployed. And so we really do need jobs and the opportunity for households to find an appropriate job for them, know where they're going to be, and then make their housing decisions, whether they're rental decisions or ownership decisions, based on their job situation. I want to go back to the issue of affordability because it really is a three-legged stool. One of those is obviously the price of the home. The second is the income level. But the third is, and it's equally important to the other two, is the level of interest rates. And Tim's right. That's what's pushing affordability to the point now where the typical home, and that's what the center produces statistics on housing affordability. And so we look at the median price home or the typical first-time buyer purchase home, compare that to the income level of those folks that would be likely purchasing those homes. And we find that the statistics right now say that for all buyers, meaning primarily repeat buyers, the Seattle market and, in fact, every county in the state of Washington now, with the exception of San Juan County, has a housing affordability index of at least 100, which means the typical family could afford the typical home. And the first-time buyer index in most counties indicates that there's choices for affordable homes in virtually every county.
We're talking about the real estate market, specifically in the greater King County area. Glenn Crellin is a guy with his eye on the entire state. He's with the Washington Center for Real Estate Research in Pullman, Washington at WSU. Tim Ellis is a data analyst at Redfin, and you're really focused on the Seattle area market with SeattleBubble.com. Lynn Robertson is working in real estate in the Seattle area. And Lynn, I wanted to follow up on something Glenn said with you, which had to do with your ability as a, not you, but one's ability to buy a home. When people come to you looking for housing, is part of your job to tell them that they can't afford to buy and they should rent?
No, I don't take that on myself. But I do put them, I refer a number of lenders out to them and actually have them speak with a lender. And it's really important to me, and I think overall, that they not only find out what they qualify for, but find out what they're comfortable with in their own life as far as payment, so they're not overspending. Many times, I'm finding recently with all these components fitting together the way they are right now, that people can afford to buy homes for nearly the same that they're paying for rent. In those situations, it's great. I don't make that call. They do with the lender.
Well, so why, if I could afford the same amount for rent as I could for a mortgage, why would I choose one over the other, Tim?
You know, it's really location specific right now, I think. You know, there are some neighborhoods where it's definitely possible to find a relatively comparable home for about the same monthly payment to buy versus rent. But if you're looking in certain neighborhoods, it still makes more sense to rent. And I think that's where kind of the decision comes down.
Where do I want to live?
Yeah.
Is it or whether it's more important to own the place you live?
Just what your personal priorities are. You know, that renting has certain advantages that some people really like, mobility, you know, not responsible for maintenance, things like that. But then ownership also has a lot of benefits that really appeal to some people, which, you know, stability, they like being able to make improvements. So it's really a personal decision as much as a financial one.
Michael writes, I often hear that prices are still too high in Seattle, and it reminds me of a friend who came last year from Vancouver, BC. He asked me what my house was worth. I told him, and he was astounded at how inexpensive our real estate is. I think his sentiment underscores that Seattle prices should not be compared with Spokane or Boise, but with other large coastal cities. My question is, are you seeing foreign investment in real estate in our market? Lynn's nodding, yes.
I actually do have people from Vancouver. Just learned, in fact, an awful lot about non-resident purchases here in Seattle. So absolutely, that is definitely on the rise.
And they can get financing for something like that?
They can get financing, more money down, and there are tax consequences that they have to put into, you know, they've got to address it. But yes, absolutely.
We're talking about real estate, and here's the perfect question. Barbara in Seattle, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm about to list my house that I've lived in for about 17 years in Seattle, and it feels kind of crazy to be selling it at the bottom of the market, but I'm also looking to take advantage of the houses that are more affordable to me now out there. And I'm just sort of wondering if this makes sense before I actually pull the trigger on this next week. In terms of interest rates, am I likely to come out ahead on this? And is there much to choose from out there that's being listed?
Lynn, you want to field that one?
Sure. I would say definitely go out and see what is available, the kinds of choices. It depends on the question about what's available will be highly dependent on price range that you're looking to move into. I would say really fully educate yourself on those aspects, particularly what's available before you pull the trigger, as you say.
Well, I have seen some stuff. Of course, I don't want to be. I know there's some houses out there. It's just sort of how much is out there is the question. You know, I don't want to be, I don't want to hold two mortgages at once. So we definitely want to sell before we start seriously looking. But we've certainly done some exploration of the market.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like Lynn that people are looking to buy, dependent on the price range. Is there a particular price range that sort of the mid-range price that people are looking for?
That's not really what I was focusing on. It's more about availability of what's in, like, excuse me, under $250,000. You may find a lot of fixers, a lot of foreclosures and short sales. From $250,000 to $450,000, you may find homes that are move-in ready. And so each buyer is going to have their own set of needs.
Tim, you had a list of somewhere on Seattle Bubble, a list of sort of things. I can't remember. It was three. One was, you know, what kind of place you're ready to move into, location, which you keep talking about. And there was, I guess I can't remember the third, but it was what you want, what you will accept.
Right. Yeah. That's something I carried over from my engineering days. You have three factors. When it comes to housing, you really kind of need to consider the price that you're willing to pay, the quality, you know, of home, that which is, you know, how nice the home is, how big the home is, things like that, and then also the location. And you're not going to be able to get the best in all three of those. You're not going to find, you know, a $250,000 house in you know, Fremont that's 3,000 square feet and, you know, brand new. So you have to kind of decide, you know, make the decisions of which ones are you going to kind of give a little bit on to be able to get a little more in the other one. And as far as a caller's question about listing right now, I definitely think that it's not a bad idea to list, for sure. There are right now, the problem I think for a lot of buyers is that the inventory that is out there, is a lot of it's really stale and just not interesting and overpriced. And so if you can come onto the market with a competitive price and a home that really shines, I think you're going to have no problems attracting the buyers. And like Glenn was mentioning earlier, she's seen some multiple offers, and the multiple offers are on those kind of homes that are attractively priced and look really nice and just really shine compared to the competition. There's a lot of homes out there that are just sitting and getting no attention, and the buyers that are out there are kind of all going for the same homes.
Thanks so much, and good luck with that, Barbara. Glenn Crellin, on a wider scale, are you seeing in Western Washington or the greater Puget Sound region and increase in new construction, new investment?
The construction market is extremely sluggish, particularly on the single-family side, and that's really true across the entire state. The greater Seattle area is no different. Where we are starting to see a little bit of movement on the construction side is the construction of new apartments.
Rental
apartments.
Wow. A lot of investment in that, or?
Well, compared to where it had been a couple of years ago, yeah, it is quite a bit of investment, but that's all relative.
Huh. I'm surprised that there's any kind of construction now. If we have seen a bunch of condos convert to apartments, why would people build new apartment buildings?
Because vacancy rates are going down. We do a survey every 6 months of apartment vacancies and rents across the entire state. We don't do it in the central Puget Sound, but a research firm there, Dupre Plus Scott, does that market, and we use basically the same methodology. And in almost every county in the state, vacancy rates have declined noticeably. King County, for example, vacancy rate in September of 2009 was 6.7%, and by September of last year, it was down to 4.9%. Anytime that vacancy rate gets below 5%, the developers start to say it's time to put up some new product.
We're talking with Glenn Crellin at the Washington Center for Real Estate Research at Washington State University in Pullman. Lynn Robertson, who's been in real estate as a broker, property manager, and investor for more than 20 years. She currently works with your Seattle home team on Queen Anne in Seattle. Tim Ellis is a data analyst for Redfin. He runs SeattleBubble.com. We're talking about when is a good time to buy or to sell your home right now as we watch our real estate market just kind of loll about on the shoals of the recession. This is 94.9 KUOW.
As part of our continuing coverage of the crisis in Cairo, Ross Reynolds will speak with UW political science professor Ellis Goldberg in Cairo. That's at noon today. Do you have firsthand knowledge of Egypt or perhaps a question? You can call the conversation feedback line right now, 206-221-3663. That's 206-221-3663.
Support for KUOW comes from the state of Montana, with 16 ski areas and millions of acres of powder across the state. Tools to help plan winter vacations are online at skimt.com.
This is 94.9 KUOW News and Information.
Support for KUOW comes from the Fifth Avenue Theater, presenting Next to Normal, the story of a family in crisis set to a rock-inspired score. Alice Ripley reprises her starring role in this new musical direct from Broadway. Plays February 22nd through March 13th. Tickets at fifthavenue.org.
We'll also be bringing you special coverage of the day's events in Egypt from the BBC World Service. That's starting this morning at 10. It's 50 degrees with some light rain in Seattle. 52 for the high today with scattered showers throughout the afternoon. 46 overnight and a chance of rain. I'm Rainey Cohen. It's 9:40.
From 94.9 KUOW, I'm Marcy Silman in for Steve Scher. Local analysts have been watching and waiting for the Seattle area housing market to improve, or at least to stop dropping off. Joining us to look into their crystal balls, a trio of real estate experts in the studio with us, Lynn Robertson, who has been in real estate for more than 20 years. She's currently working with your Seattle home team on Queen Anne. Glenn Krellen joins us by phone. He's with the Washington Center for Real Estate Research at Washington State University. And Tim Ellis, who is a data analyst for Redfin, and he runs SeattleBubble.com. And we talked a little bit about apartment rentals. So we're looking at a market where nobody wants a condo anymore, or Lynn, are people sort of tentatively wading back in?
Well, I think it depends on the buyer. Investors, what's happening in the condo market is that every condo building can only have a certain number of rental properties. And as people were facing job losses and their own personal crises, more condo owners requested to rent their units. And that threshold has been hit and saturated, basically. So an investor looking for a condo is probably not a good match because they're very likely not going to be able to rent it. A home buyer looking to get into the market may find that a perfect fit.
So if you see, back to Tim's idea of what you actually want, if you see a building that you want to live in and a place that appeals to you and you like what the layout is, it's worth it then.
Yeah, it could be. I think one of the difficulties right now in the condo market is that there's a disparity between what the buyers are looking for and where all the supply is. You know, we had a lot of kind of higher-end development during the boom, and a lot of that is still coming online or is online and is sitting there and waiting for buyers, but the buyers are all kind of a lot further down on the lower end. You know, they're looking for condos in the 250 to 300 range, but all the condos that are on the market are in the, you know, 450 to
million
and up range. Yeah.
There's still million-dollar condos on the market,
sure,
aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring more listeners into our conversation, and Mark in Kirkland has been on hold for a while. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Well, more than a question, I had a comment. We've been in the market to sell our home in View Ridge for some time, and in October, we sold our home, and we sold it in a week, actually. And we priced it based on what everybody else in the neighborhood was pricing their homes for, which was much more than we were selling ours for. And so my point was, when we bought it in 2003 for $390 and then sold it for $640 very fast. And I guess what I'm saying is that the prices have gone up tremendously just in 7 years.
And so you feel like they were still high. You didn't take a loss on your home.
No, we made quite a good profit, but, you know, everything else is relatively expensive. So we moved to Kirkland and bought a short sale to be able to get more home for our money.
Huh. Were you looking for a location in particular?
We were willing to move out of a great neighborhood, View Ridge, to be able to get more house because we couldn't afford it in View Ridge still. A house comparable to what we just bought would have cost several hundred thousand more than we could have afforded. So I'm surprised. To me, we were surprised at how much people wanted for their homes still in today's market. They were seeing 2007 prices in their head. Either they owed that much or they just wanted that much for their homes. They felt they were worth that. But most people weren't selling their homes that we were comparing to in our own neighborhood.
Huh. Yeah, I think that goes back to what Glenn was mentioning at one point earlier, that a lot of these people who bought, maybe when you bought, maybe refinanced multiple times, and so they have to get, you know, more money for their homes in order to pay off all their loans.
But is it possible that people don't have a realistic assessment of what the market is when they come with a house that they think is really great, or maybe they remodeled their kitchen and, you know, made it marble countered and soapstone sink and all that kind of stuff? And
yeah, definitely. I think if we had a listing agent here, they would definitely confirm that as well, that that's one of the fights that a listing agent is always going to have with the potential home seller, is trying to talk them down off of what their elevated sense is of what the home is worth.
Now, Glenn Crellin, I know that, thanks, Mark, by the way, for your question. I know that you're not a listing agent, but if somebody was contemplating a sale of a property, what would you advise them to do to educate themselves about where they should be in the market?
Well, I think most of those folks are going to be working with a real estate licensee. And that licensee is going to be providing them the best information they have access to about what's actually selling in the market, looking at the comparables. And those sellers need to pay attention to what the agent's telling them, because they're really helping them position their property for success in the marketplace. And it's not about how much you paid for the unit. It's not about how much you owe. It's on what the market is supporting at this point in time. And friends of mine that have been in the process of selling homes, particularly in the early stages of the downturn, my advice to them was not to be greedy.
That's probably good advice all the time, isn't it?
Absolutely.
We're talking about entering or maybe leaving the real estate market. Glenn Crellin's on the phone with us from Pullman, Washington. In the studio, Tim Ellis and Lynn Robertson, and a lot of listeners with questions. And I think I'm going to take this question, Glenn, and I think it's for you. This is Doug in Port Angeles. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Yes. If your panel there has any sense of how Clallam County is doing in the real estate market. I know it's been depressed. Is it starting to improve at all or not?
And so, Glenn, that's a question I have for you. We have several callers from sort of the Olympic Peninsula, Jefferson County, Clallam County, rural counties. Are they on the upswing?
Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I'm looking at the statistics that I'm pulling together now for the fourth quarter of 2010, and it looks like of the two counties you just referenced, both are seeing changes in the positive direction. Well, Clallam tends to be moving up. Jefferson is a little bit more stable. But they're looking at different sorts of trends. Jefferson County has been the one that has surprised a lot of people, given the fact that the prices there are surprisingly high relative to the income levels of the that are reported in the county. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it has become a retirement destination. Clallam County has had that situation for a long time, and Jefferson has really joined in the last 7 or 8 years.
Jefferson being Port Townsend.
Correct.
We're talking about real estate for a few more minutes, and I want to bring Peter and Sammamish into our conversation. Hi, Peter.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I had a question basically looking at purchasing a rental as an investment, and I was wondering if there's any particular region or locality where that would make more sense or be easier to rent, and what price range I should look at.
How big a rental property are you thinking of purchasing?
One which would easily rent.
Lynn, you've done some investment in that area.
Right. And it's, as Tim was saying earlier, it's all about location. I would say right now, near level areas where there's more employment, near Microsoft, for example, or in downtown Seattle where transportation is easily accessed, those are areas where the houses, the rental vacancies are lower. But as far as price, it's all going to depend on what each particular unit or house will command in rent versus what the what you pay for the home.
Tim, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just confirm what she says. You really need to look for neighborhoods that are relatively close to either transit or jobs. And I think with rentals, the key is to not buy, really big house, but think more of like, okay, what kind of home are people, that are renting going to be looking for? They don't necessarily have as much stuff because they're usually a little more mobile. So, really keeping that kind of thing in mind. And I think close into Seattle, it's going to be pretty hard right now still to find homes that, you can buy and then rent out for a positive cash flow.
Because they're so expensive.
Yeah, though. Yeah. That's just always going to be hard in Seattle proper. If you go a little further out and you can maybe find some of those, but then you run into the problem of there's, you know, going to be a lot less rental demand.
Interesting conundrum there.
Yeah.
If you want to be near where the people are who rent, but you can't afford to buy the property. Jeffrey emails, it's really all about having a great realtor. You'd probably agree with that, Lynn. I had to sell my house in Des Moines a year ago due to a new job in the Bay Area. My realty team did a great job analyzing the neighborhood to price the house properly. It sold in 3 weeks with multiple offers, and we're now renting a house in the Bay Area. So I guess just to finish out this segment, I'd like, maybe starting with Glenn, but to have each of you give your thoughts to a potential single-family home buyer, home maybe being a condo or a house. Glenn, what would be the first word of advice for somebody in the Seattle area from you?
Well, I think my real advice is become familiar with the market and certainly watch trends on mortgage interest rates, because they're going to play a very significant role in how big your payment is going to be moving forward.
Okay, Tim Ellis?
I think definitely now is a better time to buy than we've seen like any time in the last 5 years at least. And if you're looking to buy right now, you know, you got to realize, depending on where you're buying, the price may still go down a little more. So, you know, you're buying a place to live, not a place, you know, not a piggy bank. So if you can find a place that you really want to live in and you can afford the payments, you know, there's definitely going to be some good choices out there, I think, this year for that.
And Lynn Robertson, the boots on the ground member of our panel.
Right. I would say if you're really considering it, call a lender, start talking about various loan programs, and figure out where your price range is, and then educate yourself heavily in the market to see if it's a good fit. What you can afford to buy is a move up for you. There you have it.
Well, potential investors, good luck with all of that, your search or your sale. Lynn Robertson is with Your Seattle Home Team on Queen Anne. Glenn Crellin, who joined us by phone from Pullman, is with Washington Center for Real Estate Research. Tim Ellis is a data analyst for Redfin, and his site is called seattlebubble.com. Thanks, all three of you, for being with us.
Thank you.
This is KUOW. A huge part of the United States was slammed by a massive blizzard this week. Here in the Pacific Northwest, things have been Pacific. Joining us with his regular Friday forecast, our atmospheric scientist, Cliff Mass. Hello.
Hi.
So why is it Pacific here and wild everywhere else?
Well, there's a direct connection between the two.
Really?
Right. We have a ridge of high pressure over the eastern Pacific. And so, basically, you can think of a rope that's swinging back and forth. And, you know, when you swing it back and forth, some parts go up and some parts go down. It's like a wave-like structure to it. Well, the atmosphere is just like that. It has wave-like structures. And when it moves northward, there's a ridge, and down to the south, it's a trough. And we have a ridge over us, which really implies that they're going to have a trough in the eastern and central U.S., and we have been locked into this pattern with a ridge over us and a trough over them for a long time. And it's not going away. We're having a slight break over the weekend, but it shows right back up on Tuesday, Wednesday next week.
So does that mean that they're going to have more snow and blizzards?
They will.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm looking at the maps, and it's hard to believe. They're just going to get more and more. There's several more systems that are forecast to move up the East Coast. None of them look quite as bad as what they've had already, but they're going to have more snow. And Northeast is going to see more snow, and it's just not going to end. Cold air is going to continue to pour into the central part of the United States. The snow is bad enough, but the temperatures have been amazingly cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been records broken everywhere from the southwest. You can go to Arizona, New Mexico, then Texas, and keep on going. really amazingly cold air. The temperatures have fallen below minus 40 in a few locations. It's just extraordinary.
And now, is this a, I mean, I know we're affected by La Nina. Is the rest of the country affected by that as well?
Well, you know, the pattern we're seeing, it's like La Nina in some ways, and in some ways it's not. La Nina is, we often see this ridging in the eastern Pacific. So that's not so atypical. But this has been amazingly persistent, very unusual. Hmm. And in fact, it's been so persistent that we're not getting one thing that we generally see in La Nina. The snowpack is generally way above normal during La Nina years, especially a moderate one like we have right now. But this ridge has been so strong that our snowpack now is fading back. We were up close to normal about a month ago, and now we're sliding back to about 55 to 65% of normal in the Central Cascades.
Crazy.
And there's going to be a little snow over the late in the weekend, but it's not going to be much. And we're also not getting any of the lowland snow, which tends to be more frequent during La Nina years after the change of the new year. So, you know, I don't know what to call this. It has a little La Nina-esque type of character to it, but it's something different.
Well, let's just look real near term. This weekend, the National Weather Service is talking about rain. Is that what you're thinking as well, that we're going to see in the Seattle area?
There'll be, and especially the northern part of the state. Right now, a weak cold front is moving through, and there's rain, some moderate rain in a few places that I can see on the radar. That's going to be moving through during the day today. So actually, it's going to dry out later in the afternoon, and we may see a weak convergence zone over the central Puget Sound. But other than that, it'll be fairly dry over the lowlands, and there'll be some showers in the mountains. It's so warm out there right now that it's actually been raining in the mountains and in the passes. And in fact, that rain is going to continue tomorrow, unfortunately. Then tomorrow, a warm front shows up. And the way this, it's going to keep the temperatures up, and it's going to mainly hit the Olympics and Northern Cascades and Vancouver Island. So if you want to get out of it, just go south. So we'll have some rain tomorrow. Then we'll have rain continuing into Sunday. Then that's going to push through. The temperatures are going to get colder. And then earlier in the week, especially after Monday afternoon, cold air is going to move in, and then another ridge builds, and we're going to get cooler and dry again. So you could see sun on Tuesday and Wednesday, and we'll be only getting up into the 40s because the air will be relatively cold. Eastern Washington, the air will be even colder than we have here.
Wow. Okay, so that's the ridge, that snapping of the rope, and then we'll look for the snow to happen in Chicago again.
Right. One thing I wanted to mention, I'm giving two talks.
Yes, I wanted to mention that as well.
Tomorrow, on Saturday, I'm going to be in Port Townsend at the high school at 3:30, and I'm going to be talking about the local implications of global warming. So if anybody's in Port Townsend, I'll be there. And then on the 23rd of February, I'll be at Ivers Mukilteo Landing at 7 o'clock. I'm going to give a fun talk on the storm that destroyed that restaurant back in 2003. This is one of the few restaurants in the area that's dedicated to weather. And this storm, this surge of westerly winds went down the Strait of Juan de Fuca and destroyed that restaurant, and they rebuilt it dedicated to weather. It's great. They even have a weather station.
So that's the 23rd of February at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. I'll be talking
okay.
about that.
Thanks so much,
sure.
Cliff. Cliff is Cliff Mass, that's his full name, professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Washington, a regular Friday guest on Weekday, produced by Katie Sewell and Sage Van Wing. Tadavik Aprikyan produced our show on real estate. Rainey Cohn is our engineer, and Amina Al-Sadi screen calls. I'm Marcy Silman, in for Steve Scher here on 94.9 KUOW.
We're going to preempt our regular programming in order to bring you special coverage on the events in Egypt, coming live from the BBC starting at 10 o'clock until 2 today. Stay with us.
Support for KUOW comes from Aegis Living, a senior living company specializing in assisted living and memory care, fostering socialization, nutrition, and dedicated to nurturing personal care. Information on local communities at aegisliving.com.
KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle, KUOW 1340 AM Tumwater Olympia.
Support for KUOW comes from Tully's handcrafted quality coffee, whose slow roasting process is designed to bring out the beans' smooth flavor and rich aroma. Available online and at local grocers. More information at tullysworthdiscovering.com.
Ronald Reagan was born 100 years ago this weekend. With his centenary approaching, he's been on the minds of many Republicans and one especially prominent Democrat. President Obama has been reading up on the 40th president and would like to emulate some of his success. The influence of Reagan's presidency on Barack Obama's. That's this afternoon at 4. News headlines are in a minute.